Grace, mercy, and peace be to you from God our Father and our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Amen. So this morning we continue our sermon series titled Stuck with Tom Hanks as we go through classic Tom Hanks movies and look at them as parables. Just in the way that Jesus taught in parables, he used earthly stories to teach us heavenly meanings. And that's what we're going to look at today as we look at this movie, Apollo 13. Now, the cool thing about Apollo 13 is that it's a true story. And what was already a famous event in 1970 was made even more famous and dramatized a little bit by director Ron Howard and most especially the acting skills of Tom Hanks. Now, in this story, in this movie, Tom Hanks, he plays astronaut Jim Lovell. And we're going to look at Jim's story and how that relates a little bit to our lives. And in this first scene, we see Jim, he's hosting a watch party at his house. And it's not the same kind of watch party we usually have. It's not for the Super Bowl or for the season finale of our favorite show. But he's having a watch party for the Apollo 11 moon landing. Him and a bunch of other astronauts, a bunch of other people who work at NASA, they're watching Neil Armstrong take his first steps on the moon. And as we watch the scene, I want you to pay attention to Jim Lovell's face. Pay attention to what's going on inside of him and the emotion he is experiencing as he watches Neil Armstrong first walk on the moon.
There he is! There he is! Everybody, quiet down! There he is!
Hey, kids!
We had a good picture, huh? Okay, will you verify the position the opening I ought to have on the camera? What?
Hey, Jim, you think it's too late for him to abort?
No, he's got time to get out of there. Just need somebody to wave him off. Wave him off, Neil!
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now. Okay.
Boy, look at those pictures.
Wow.
I'm at the foot of the ladder. The lamp footbeds are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches. It's almost like a powder.
Armstrong is on the moon.
Yeah,
Neil Armstrong, 38-year-old American, standing on the surface of the moon. On this July 20th, 1969.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
His quote was, that's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Do you see it in his face? How badly he wants to be in Neil Armstrong's shoes at that moment. You see, Jim Lovell, he's got a passion and a desire and something he wants above all else. He wants to walk on the moon. Now, when it comes to our lives, many of us have something similar to Jim Lovell's moonwalk. Something we want, something we're planning on, often many things that we want so badly. Like Jim Lovell, we all have things we want, things we're planning on, things that we would like to see have happen in our lives. And for Jim Lovell, it turned out he was a pretty exceptional astronaut. And NASA, they were planning on giving him his chance. And he was actually slated to be the commander of the Apollo 14 moon landing. If everything went to plan, he was set to be the fourth man to ever walk on the moon. But even as he was planning, and even as NASA was planning on sending him to the moon in Apollo 14, there was still this little piece in the back of his head that said, maybe I'm not going to get to go. And there was some actual nervousness surrounding the situation. Because what was happening in America was, after Apollo 11 was successful, and after Apollo 12 was successful, and assuming Apollo 13 would be successful, a lot of people were thinking that people just weren't that excited about walking on the moon over and over and over again. And so there was a thought that the funding may be cut right before Apollo 14 took place. So even though he had done everything necessary to be prepared and be called on to go on this mission, there was still some uncertainty. He wasn't sure it would happen. But then, as often happens in our lives, the circumstances changed a little. And Jim, he received some good news. And I want you to pay attention to how he responds to this news.
Home.
Definitely not. I'm not being a cheerleader, Mom. You don't understand. I worked
so hard on this.
Sparkle, maybe I don't understand, but you are not wearing that out in this neighborhood. That's the end of it. I don't want to hear
it. She's not even wearing a bra. You can see everything.
Shut up. Susan.
Hey, everybody.
Jim.
Carla, trick or treat. You know that Easter vacation trip we had planned for Acapulco?
Uh-oh.
Well, I was thinking there might be a slight change in destination.
Really?
Maybe, say, the moon. Al Shepard's ear infection has flared up, and we've all been bumped up to the prime crew of Apollo 13. Straight to the head of the line in the Frau Mara Highlands.
6 months? You're moving up 6 months?
Dad, can I please wear this?
Sure.
Jim.
No, absolutely not.
They're not rushing things, are they? I mean, you're going to be ready in 6 months?
We'll be ready. Boy, I wouldn't want to be around Al Shepard tonight. I got to get over there. We're going to have to get up to speed on this.
Go.
I'm going to walk on the moon, Marilyn.
I know. Can't believe it. Naturally, it's 13. Why 13?
It comes after 12, huh?
Apollo 13, you...
To see the joy in his face as he shared that news with his wife that he was going to walk on the moon. His dreams were becoming a reality. And sometimes that's just the way it goes. Sometimes the things we want, the things we desire, the things we plan on, they become a reality. And oftentimes it happens just like it did for Jim. Sometimes it's a combination of our hard work and a little bit of a lucky break. But all the same, there are times when things simply break our way. It could be us getting into that school we have always wanted to. It could be the moment when you know you've met the person you're going to marry, or when you get that big promotion at work, or when you have your first child, or even when you finally sit down with your accountant and realize, I can retire. There's moments where our dreams are realized, where our plans come to fruition, and we experience joy. And for Jim, that's where he was right now. He knew that he was going to get a shot to make his dreams a reality. But there was still some work ahead of him. Going to the moon, it was one of the most dangerous and difficult tasks that man had ever attempted and ever done. And so over the next couple scenes, you see Jim and his crew training over and over and over, preparing for everything that could possibly possibly go wrong, and then preparing and trying it again and again so that they had everything under control. Like us, they planned for all eventualities, making sure that their dreams would become a reality. And so a few scenes later, we're about to watch the launch. And the launch, it was such a cool time because there was so much excitement that they were finally making this dream a reality. But also on the other side, there was a lot of nervousness with the launch. And you see it on Jim's face and on his wife's face because the launch, historically, it had been the most dangerous part of the mission. A time when many missions had to be aborted, and even in one instance where the astronauts died in a fire. So there's still this little bit of uncertainty that if something's going to go wrong, it's going to happen right now.
Hey guys, we got it.
Good flight, right down the middle.
We see your BPC is clear 13.
Roger, EDS to manual. Inboard. Get ready for a little choke, fellas.
Roger. some little joke.
Tower jet! Houston, this is 13. We've got a center engine cut off. Go on the other four.
F-13, you sure the same?
Booster, can you confirm that center engine cutoff?
Roger, that flight looks like we lost it.
Fighter, what's that going to do to us?
Stand by flight.
I need to know if the IU is correcting for the number 5 shutdown.
Houston, what's the story on engine 5?
Looks good. Looks good. We're still go.
We'll be all right as long as we don't lose another one.
Roger that.
A 13, we're not sure why the inboard was out early, but the other engines are a go, so we're just going to burn those remaining engines for a little bit longer.
Roger that. Our gimbals are good. Our trim is good.
Looks like we just had our glitch for this mission.
Looks like we just had our glitch for this mission. And that's the thing about life and about this story. We plan for little glitches. We prepare for them, and that's why they had enough engines where if one or two went out, they could still make it. They had prepared for all eventualities, everything they could possibly think of that could go wrong. They had a redundancy, doubling up. They had two pilots just in case something would happen to one. They tried to plan for everything. And we do the same. That's why we have savings accounts. That's why we have car and health insurance for those little glitches in life, like when the car breaks down or we have an unexpected medical bill. But the thing with the little glitches is they're still part of the plan. We expect them. We're usually ready for them. And yeah, they cause some stress, but they don't turn our life upside down. The problem is sometimes it's more than a little glitch. Jim Lovell and his crew, they thought this was their glitch for the mission because their joke was that there was always something little that went wrong, and they had thought they had got past it. But their problems were only just beginning. A few days later, we're about to see a scene where things really start to go in a way they could have never expected.
We've got a problem here.
What did you do?
Nothing. I stirred the tanks.
Whoa. Hey.
This is Houston. Say again, please.
Houston, we have a problem. We have a main bus B undervolt. We've got a lot of thruster activity here, Houston.
Now?
It just went offline. Oh, there's another master alarm, Houston.
I'm checking the quad.
Christ, that was no repress valve.
Maybe it's in quad
C. We've got a computer restart.
I'm going to reconfigure the RCS.
We've got a pink light.
When these things fire, it doesn't make any sense.
We've got multiple caution and warning, Houston. We've got a reset and restart.
All right, I'm going to SDS.
Jesus. Flight, the heart rates are skyrocketing.
Econ, what's your data telling you?
O2 tank 2 not reading at all. Tank 1 is at 725 PSI and falling. Fuel cells 1 and 3 are, oh boy, what's going on here? Flight, let me get back to you.
Flight GNC?
Flight, they're all over the place. They keep yawing close to gimbal lock.
I keep losing radio signal. Flight, their antenna must be
22. You're going to have to do it manually.
One at a time, people. One at a time. One at a time. Ecom, is this an instrumentation problem, or are we looking at real power loss here?
It's reading a quadruple failure. That can't happen. It's got to be instrumentation.
That famous line, Houston, we have a problem. When something so catastrophic happened that it was something they could have never have planned for or never have expected. And did you catch that line from the flight engineer on the ground as he says, I'm reading a quadruple failure. When all these things are going wrong at the same time. And then what does he say? He says, that can't happen. He blames the instrumentation, figuring this is impossible. It can't all go this wrong at the same time. And sometimes things in life, they happen. Things we couldn't have planned for, things we couldn't have accounted for. And I'm going to call those things today the tragedies. And those quadruple failures in life that just wreak havoc on everything. And if you've had these happen, or if a loved one has had these happen to you, you know what I'm talking about. They can be a host of different things, but they're just not things that can be planned for. Those illnesses, whether mental or physical, that we just can't quite get over. Maybe a cancer diagnosis. A broken relationship that ends in divorce. Financial ruin. The death of a loved one or an accident. And the list, it goes on and on. These things that happen in life that leave us with our life turned upside down, with our heads spinning, and we're just left trying to catch our breath, trying to adjust, trying to figure out what to do next. And that's what these men on the Apollo 13 mission were left doing. They were just trying to figure out what is the next step in the wake of this tragedy. And the thing is, this tragedy, it wasn't their fault. Just like some of the tragedies in our lives, they just happen. It doesn't necessarily mean it's our fault, but sometimes things just go wrong. What happened on their ship, that oxygen tank that exploded, it was a defect in manufacturing from over 2 years prior to this. Before Neil Armstrong had ever landed on the moon, this mission, it was already doomed because of a little mistake. It was no one's fault. It was just going to happen. And so their plans were altered. They needed to figure out what to do next. And in the next scene, we're going to see them realizing that their plans are going to be altered, that their dreams are going to change, and their goal, it's going to shift a little bit. And pay attention to Jim's emotions as he comes to this realization.
Gene, the Odyssey is dying. From my chair here, this is the last option.
Capcom, let's have them close reactant valves.
13, this is Houston. We want you to close react valves on cells 1 and 3. Do you copy?
Are you saying you want the whole smash? Closing down the react valves for fuel cells shutdown? Shutting down the fuel cells. Did I hear you right?
Yeah, they heard me right. Tell them we think that's the only way they can stop the leak.
Yeah, Jim,
we think that closing the react valves may stop the leak.
Did he copy that?
Do you copy, Jim?
Yes, Houston, we copy. We just lost the moon.
And then it hits you. When a tragedy strikes and you are left in a place where your plans need to be altered. Those perfect plans that you had, those desires, those dreams, sometimes we realize, just as Jim just did, they're not going to happen like we wanted. And it hurts, and it's painful, and it's hard. And in this situation, we're often like this Apollo 13 crew. We're just left trying to figure out what the next step is, taking the next drastic measure to fix whatever problem we're dealing with. And in their situation, it was an oxygen leak. They were going to suffocate in a matter of a few minutes, and they had to do something about it. So the option was shutting off the valves and foregoing the mission to the moon. And the funny thing is, it didn't even work. The leak kept going. And you see them, they have to get into their lunar landing craft and use it as a lifeboat to try and get home. And over the next hour of the movie, they're dealing with problem after problem after problem, all caused by that original problem, and it keeps tumbling, and they're forced to make drastic decision after drastic decision, just trying to literally keep breathing, to try and get home, because their goal, it is no longer getting to the moon, it is just simple survival. And how often is life just like that? How often does an unexpected tragedy wreak havoc on everything? And we're just left trying to pick up the pieces. Our plan completely changed, completely altered, and we just try to survive. We ask God for an answer. We ask that He would take it away from us. And just like these Apollo 13 men, we look for that answer and that solution. Now, what's cool about this story is they keep overcoming. They keep accomplishing and fixing the next problem and keep moving forward. Through the work of these three astronauts and all the men on the ground and those brilliant minds at NASA, they keep going. And the next scene we're going to see, this Apollo 13 craft, it's within a relatively small amount of miles from Earth's atmosphere. They are so close to getting home, to surviving this tragedy. And you're going to hear a conversation with the people in the flight crew down in Houston. And they're talking about, well, what are the odds these guys actually make it? And they're coming to the conclusion that the odds are not very good. That because of all the damage sustained to the ship, they're probably not going to survive the reentry. And they're talking about this and discussing what a disaster it could be. And then the flight director, Gene Kranz, he has a reply. And I want you to pay special attention to what he has to say in the midst of this conversation.
Let me put it this way. The trajectory may be off. Their thrusters may be frozen. Their guidance system might be malfunctioning. Their heat shield could be cracked. And their parachutes might be three blocks of ice. So clearly, we have some obstacles to overcome.
Okay, well, now I'm asking you, when will we know?
Blackout lasts for 3 minutes. If they're not back in four, we'll know.
They're still shallowing a bit up there. Do you want to tell them?
Is there anything we could do about it?
Not now, Flake.
And they don't need to know, do they?
Copy that.
Is this typhoon still present in the splashdown?
Yeah.
Here we got the parachute situation, the heat shield, the angle of the trajectory, and the typhoon. There's just so many variables. I'm a little lost.
I know what the problems are, Henry. This could be the worst disaster NASA's ever experienced.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
I believe this is going to be our finest hour. Are we going to talk about that? What is he talking about? Because first of all, NASA has put millions and millions of dollars and hundreds of hours of so many people's time into making this mission a success. And not long after the launch, it was a mitigated disaster. They weren't landing on the moon. And now they're just trying to keep these men alive, and the odds are they're still going to die. As a national audience watches, odds are these men will not make it home alive. And so those two men who were talking, saying this could be the worst disaster in NASA history, they're right. So what is the flight director saying when he says, I believe this will be our finest hour? Well, first of all, he's being an optimist. He's taking that 1 in 10 chance that these men do make it back alive. Which, if you know the story or you watch the rest of the movie, you see that they do. Against all odds, they make it home to their families and they survive. But even still, isn't the mission still a failure? They failed to do what they set out to do. Their goals were ripped apart and their plan was altered. So how is this flight director saying, I believe this will be our finest hour? Well, in his opinion, it's not the successful mission to the moon that makes it a success, but rather their ability to overcome the tragedies. Their ability to overcome the obstacles and still save the lives of their astronauts. That's his point, that their finest hour would be in this moment of weakness. And this is what takes us to our sermon text today, because we see a story with St. Paul that parallels this Apollo 13 tragedy. And in the story, St. Paul, he's dealing with a thorn in his side. Something that is harassing him, some kind of tragedy in his life, something that has changed his plans. He can't do things the way he wants to. He can't travel like he wants to. He can't complete his missions like he wants to. And the Bible doesn't tell us exactly what's wrong. We can maybe assume it's some kind of chronic illness. But nevertheless, Paul has this unexpected, unplanned for tragedy going on in his life. And so he's pleading with God, God, please take this away from me. Take this thorn from my side. And he asks God 3 times, and God responds. And it's not a response that Paul expected. It's actually a response quite similar to the flight director's response. God says this to St. Paul: "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." My power is made perfect in weakness. You see, just as NASA, they had their finest hour in this moment of weakness, where despite all the obstacles, they were able to save the lives of their astronauts. God often showcases his power in our own weaknesses. And we've all seen it. Those times where God simply answers our prayer, where he brings restoration or healing or opens a new door and a new path. And we see how he was working in those weak moments in our lives. And it's in those moments that his power is all the more evident to us. Sometimes he even takes us in our weak state and allows us to be witnesses, and it makes that witness even more powerful. It's true. God works in our weakest moments. He works in our earthly weaknesses. But this verse in 2 Corinthians, I don't think it's talking about our earthly traumas and our earthly tragedies. Rather, I think it's talking about something bigger. Because when it comes down to it, while these earthly tragedies, these earthly glitches we experience, they matter quite a bit to us, in the big picture, they're not the biggest problem we have. They're not the biggest tragedy we have. The biggest tragedy we have, it's one we all share in common. And it's sin. Sin is our greatest tragedy. Our sinful nature is our greatest weakness. And that is our real problem. Because that problem, left unsolved, leaves us with death and an eternal separation from our God. A life lived away from his love. A pain that we can't even imagine, that would put to shame all the things that we think are problems here in this life. And that is the problem that Jesus Christ came to address. That is the tragedy that he came to deal with. That is where his power is made perfect. When he died on the cross for us, when he solved that problem of sin for us, when he traded his blood to pay our debt so that we may have salvation. That is the tragedy that he came to address. That is what he meant when he told Paul, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness." And as we talk about the earthly tragedies today, how they change our plans, how they wreak havoc on our lives, and they leave us just reeling, trying to figure out what to do next, we need to understand something. God, he can, and at times will, answer those earthly requests, answer those earthly prayers, and bring us out of that. He has the power to do that, and we've seen him do that. But the answer is not always going to be yes. Just like he said no to Paul in this situation, sometimes those prayers will not be answered, that problem will not be fixed. And that's because Jesus Christ, he came to do something else. Yeah, he cares about our earthly needs, and he's taking care of us, but what he came to do was not address that, but to address our bigger problem, to address the greatest problem we all have. And that problem is our spiritual problem, the problem of sin, that when we ultimately do die, that we are going to have to be faced with our sin, and either Jesus Christ is stamping his name on that sin for us, or we are going to have to pay for it ourselves. And what he has given us by his blood on that cross is he has given us pardon, he has given us salvation, and because of that, we have something to look forward to that puts to shame all our plans on this life, or on this earth and in this life. And it puts to shame all the things that we think are troublesome in this life. We have an eternity with him to look forward to. A perfect existence in communion with his love that we can't even imagine. And it's not because of what we've done. It's not because of what we can do. It's not because of our will or effort or hard work. It's simply because he earned it for us. Let's look at his words in our gospel lesson today. Jesus says this to us: "I have said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world." See, Jesus, he never promises us an earthly life free from trouble. He says, because of our sinful nature, because of the sin in this world, we are going to have trouble. And eventually, we will have a tragedy that can't be fixed, and we will die. But take heart. I have overcome the world. I have prepared something better for you. And what he does promise us is peace. Peace in knowing that. Peace in knowing that the real problem, it's already taken care of. And that's why God responded to Paul in that way, telling him that his grace is sufficient. And that is the same response that Jesus Christ says to us every single time we deal with a trial in life. That his grace is sufficient for you. You see, that grace is all we will ever truly need. His power is made perfect in our greatest weakness. His power is made perfect in our sin. And just as in this Apollo 13 movie, NASA's finest hour was shown in a moment of tragedy, when despite that tragedy, they were able to save the lives of their astronauts. Jesus Christ, his finest hour, is shown in the fact that during our tragedy of sin, he was able to save us. His finest hour is when he hung on that cross and he said those words, "It is finished." His finest hour was when our debt was paid. His finest hour was the moment when his grace became sufficient for every mistake we ever have or ever will make. So as you face the trials in this life, whether they be the little glitches that you maybe knew were coming, but they still stress you out, or whether it be the full-blown tragedy, the thing that has your life turned on its head, that has you reeling and wondering what's next, remember the peace that he gives you. The peace that he gives you in the fact that he has overcome this world, that we have something better to look forward to. And remember that his power, it is made perfect even in our greatest weakness. And most of all, that his grace is and always will be enough for us. Amen. And now may